Hey guys, are you looking for a sports book that you can trust? Well, look no further than mybookie.ag, where you can get a 50% match on your initial deposit of up to $1,000 when you use promo code DFSArmy. As a bonus, when you use promo code DFSArmy, you also get a free month of DFSArmy VIP and DFSArmy Beat the Bookie membership. That's a $100 combined value. So we'll help you with your daily fantasy sports, and we'll help you with your handicapping free when you sign up for mybookie.ag using promo code DFSArmy.
In 2015, an elite DFS Army commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast presented to you by DFSArmy.com. I'm your host Taco, and this week we'll be looking at the Wells Fargo Championship in Charlotte, North Carolina. Of course, if they were to take place here in Indiana, it would be called the Flagstaff Championship, because we ain't got no more Wells Fargos, but that's neither here nor there. Before we get into breaking down the course, as always, I've got to let you guys know that at DFSArmy.com, you can go there using the link in the description to support the podcast, check out our offerings. Your subscription to DFSArmy.com will get you access to all of our content for all of our different sports that we cover, from baseball to golf to tennis, hockey, soccer, NASCAR, you name it. We cover it. And remember to use promo code TACO for that lifetime 20% off discount. And to support the pod, that would be greatly appreciated. Looking at the course here, this is an event that I went to last year. They had just reconfigured the course again with it being the host of the 2017 PGA Championship. I mostly went there on Wednesday and Thursday. Going on Wednesdays, honestly, to a golf event. Pro-Am's always a lot of fun. The golfers are a lot laid back. They'll talk with you. Got to meet several of my favorite golfers there. Unfortunately, Stenson wasn't there. Didn't end up meeting him until Bridgestone later that year, or last year, but still got to meet tons of golfers. A lot of my favorite golfers out there. It's just a good time, and I really wanted to focus on the greens in particular, because they were completely rehauling the greens, installing new Bermuda grass overseeded with rye. And it was really interesting how that all ended up shaking up after the PGA Championship. With the PGA Championship, it was really, really fast, like most majors are. And the greens, they're generally considered really, really lightning fast, but they didn't end up playing like that last year. I'd asked around from putting coach to putting coach, just asking what they figured the stimp was like and what they'd expect it to putt like for the rest of the week. And oddly enough, it's a very hard, very firm green, but the way it played out is actually pretty slow. It had gone from being like 12 to 12 and a half on the stimp meter on average to last year the putting coaches were saying 10 11, pretty darn slow for a PGA course, that is, compared to usual. And I think Tiger had also pointed out how there's still a little bit on the slower side, which can throw you off for a loop a little bit, but with them being so firm, it creates a lot of bounce and roll. It's very, very, very hard to keep your putt on, or keep your ball on the green when you're hitting your approach shots. There's a lot of roll-off, and the ball actually bounces pretty high. It's not like, when I'd gone to Firestone, it was a little bit wetter the night before, but, when they were hitting their approach shots, it would just stop dead on the green, as where you know, with a lot of these greens, you just saw them just really bouncing all over the place. It comes in as one of the lowest in one of the lowest courses in green irregulation percentage and also driving accuracy. And a lot of the reason is this is sort of a pure bomber's course. It's 7,500 yards, so it's already one of the longest courses on the PGA Tour. It's a par 71, not even a par 72. It's longer than the par 73 course, to kind of put it all in perspective here. The only real courses you see that are longer than it are, of course, Torrey Pines, and then Corrales Golf Club, where you just have the Corrales Punta Cana at in the Dominican Republic. That one's pretty long. Other than that, you know, you see like Erin Hills, Crooked Stick, Congressional, you know, places where you've played just like one major as a one-off, but for the most part, this is one of the longest courses on the PGA Tour. And with it being a par 71, you see a lot of extra par 4s, and this week we'll have 9 holes, so half of the golf course are par 4s, 449 yards or longer. And the only other two par 4s on the course are almost drivable. So very weird distribution there. You know, the most common hole type on the PGA Tour are medium length par 4s, which this has none of. No par 4s between 400 and 450 yards. Well, there is the one at 449, but for this week I just ran it. I just squeezed that one right in there in the big long par 4 category. And that's obviously going to be one of the main things we're looking at. So, you know, just a quick overview of guys who score well, in particular in that exact distance. You know, you've got Justin Rose, number one on the entire board, Rory McIlroy, Sungjae Im, who we know he's very good at the longer par fours and fives, guys like Wyndham Clark, who just continually pops up for me week after week after week, seeing this guy really pop off in the projected fantasy scoring. He's just been really good with the limited rounds we've seen from him. You know, at very, very specific types of holes. Like, he's one of the best here at long par 4 scoring, but one of the absolute worst at medium length par 4 scoring, but we don't have any of those, so this really, really works out in his favor. And then, of course, my boy Henrik Stenson coming in 5th on the board in that stat, so that's going to be probably the key stat for the week. Just, you know, I do like to just use the overall projected round score, projected fantasy points per hole or per round. It puts the whole course into perspective, but you really do want to look at guys who at least don't struggle on long par fours, because that is like the bulk of the course. And you're going to need to mostly just not bogey on them. But you can let a rip. All these long par fours, I mean, driving distance is pretty much the key to being able to hit those well. I know that also, you know, you have your guys like Henrik Stenson and guys like Kevin Na, William McGirt. These guys are good at longer par fours because they're extremely good with their long irons. But, you know, here it is important to be great with your iron shots, as always, of course. But with a little added extra bounce, adds a little bit more just overall variance to the whole setup here. But yeah, it's pretty normal as far as like you know, bunkers and water hazards go. Every green is protected by at least one decent sized bunker. But you know, pretty standard hole here would just have like two bunkers, and there are a couple of water hazards, and especially on like hole 17, that long par 3, comes right into play with the water. And I do believe like, well, five, maybe six holes where water comes into play. So, you know, it's no Florida, but still something that could, you know, throw the scores off. This is a really, really hard course, you know, with it being one of the longest on tour. And it averages, you know, over the last several years, it's averaged about a stroke over par. And last year, no real exception to that. You know, it's a very tough course just by nature, and you're really going to want to put an emphasis on all things driving. guys are not afraid to bomb it out here at all, because the rough is not very penal. That is something I found. When I went there on Thursday, got there in the morning, they made sure to give in extra trim, like, right before it started. And we had seen in the, you know, the PGA Championship, they kind of let it grow out a little bit and make it a lot tougher, but it seems like they did want to kind of push the course to sort of go back to being a little less difficult than at the BMW Championship, or the PGA Championship. It's kind of the idea I got from just, you know, my research while I was there. So yeah, you want guys that are able to bomb it out, but, you know, it's not just completely about driving distance, too. If you got some accuracy, that does help you. Now, I know that Jason Day just won this thing, and we have seen some guys that, you know, have a total disregard for driving accuracy that have won, but at the same time, you do want to avoid being too errant with the driver, because most of these holes are tree-lined, at least on one side. Some of them are pretty tight with the tree lines. And, you know, when running correlations, you know, this week, we actually saw driving accuracy come in a little higher than driving distance, which, you know, is a little bit mind-boggling, because only 52% of the drives were, of the drives actually hit the fairway here at this course, and that's one of the lowest marks on the entire PGA Tour. But, yeah, this is sort of like, I want to say it's almost like Augusta a little bit, where, you know, the rough's not penal at all, and sometimes you really just want to place your spot to get it into a good spot for the approach shot when dealing with the roll, you know, really focusing on getting uphill putts and avoiding hard parts of the green. So, you know, having a really good driver here is going to help you out a lot more than at your average course. I'd say this is one of the true bombers courses on tour. Up there with, Phoenix, Waste Management Open, Torrey Pines, obviously. You're just going to want to, you know, really crush the ball. That's why I've seen guys like Rory McIlroy just absolutely dominate this course over and over again. And last year, you know, pretty much everyone that was up on the leaderboard were all really good drivers hitting it over 300. You saw Jason Day up there, Paul Casey, who, you know, I know he's getting older, but he's still hitting at 300. You had Mickelson do well like he always does. This is, over the last 10 years, honestly, this might be his best course, even though he hasn't gotten a win. Just crazy amount of top fives from him. And I really can't stress how just awesome of a guy Phil is, really. Just a cool cat. You know, I sat in line for like 30 minutes waiting for his autograph. And you figure the guy would just get bored of, like, mechanically just greeting all these, like, kids and signing hats and stuff. The dude was just a legend. Ended up spending that time just talking to Tony Finau, stuck behind him in traffic, you know, and he's such a cool cat. He's going to be, I'd say he's going to be one of the highest owned golfers this week. He really should be. The course, I think, really, really, really suits him well, and he looked really good here from what I saw. But yeah, basically this week we're going to want to just focus in on some of these guys with good, you know, good total driving. Really want to see that distance off the tee, though, and if you don't have distance off the tee, we at least want to see some really nice approach shots, or just, you know, general competence at these longer holes. I don't want to take anybody that struggles too much with what this course really is asking of you. You know, players have said that this is a course that will challenge people who are shorter off the tee. That's just how it is. So, you know, the analysis actually is pretty simple this week. I mean, you always want to go contrarian and avoid the guys that might get a little bit too chalky. It is golf, you know, one of the higher variant sports there is. You can ask Molinari about the pine cone. This can be quite a random sport sometimes, but, you know, there is kind of a path to success here that's been laid out. But again, when you're looking at course history here, you don't want to look at the 2017 results of this tournament. Instead, we put up the PGA Championship results there. You've also got to remember that the course also had a pretty significant revamp back in 2014. So, the course has been touched a little bit. Even though we see a lot of guys with consistent and good course history here, it's not the best week to go off of a ton of course history. Looking at last year is going to be important. Even looking at the PGA Championship, you know, they made it play a little bit harder. And I don't know if we'll go back to it being a little bit harder or, just kind of playing like last year. It's still a very, very, very hard course, but, I imagine they'll probably cut down the rough again. And I think they're saying that they usually try to, steamroll the greens a little extra. It'll be interesting to see if they do that, but I think they do want to keep things a little bit easier because it's already a very, very tough course as it is. Kind of frustrating for some guys. It's not the worst if you... I guess it's okay for some of the, lower ball flight kind of guys because you can get a ton of roll here if things are dry. And it kind of helps you stay out of the trees. It's not really something I want to look at too much. Just some of that conjecture could be a little bit helpful here. So looking at some of the stuff that matters here, really this is kind of a course where just overall strokes gain stats and stuff are a lot more predictive than usual, your usual course. Most of the strokes gain metrics are coming in like top 15 out of 40 plus shot link enabled courses as far as predictability. So we do actually want to pay a little bit of attention to the strokes gain stats. Other stats like driving distance really does matter here. I don't know about double bogey avoidance. Really, it's just like tree avoidance. The rough won't really kill you. The pine straw won't even really kill you. It's not the worst to hit out of here, but if you find the woods, that's pretty much out of bounds in a lot of the holes. You've got, it's not, if you veer too far off the given path, you might find some marked off areas. It's got a really nice closing stretch. It's very tough, those last three holes leading into 18. And again, as usual, 18 is a really nice little closing hole. Not a ton of seating, honestly. Mostly just people sitting in the grass. It's not like some of those events where you see large stadium seating at that final hole. But still, it's a very beautiful course overall. Obviously, very well maintained. And it should provide some fun golf out there for the week. Looking at the look at how this compares to just some other courses in the types of strokes taken. This is one of the along with Kapalua, the par 73 course, and Bay Hill. Those are the only courses where more strokes from 200 plus yards, like approach strokes, are taken. And we see significantly less strokes taken from 175 yards and less, pretty much. So taking an extra look at long iron play is going to be a really good thing to look at this week. And other than that, I kind of like scrambling a little bit more than usual. We saw both scrambling and putting coming in more than usual, especially with the very low amount of greens regulation and driving accuracy. You're gonna need to scramble. This isn't the best week to play guys that really, really struggle with their scrambling, because that's just something you're gonna have to do. It's not super hard. It's just something that you're going to have to do throughout the course of the week. And with the if the greens are gonna stay a little bit slower, I'd say that the better putters have an even better chance. The more predictable a green is, the better, the more that helps the better putters. You saw last week, last year, Jason Day winning this thing. He's pretty much like the best putter that there is on the PGA Tour of all the studs. And, we can see some more success. You know, we've actually seen a lot of guys that just come into this thing and they're putting pretty well. And that's kind of what does it for them. It's kind of gross really looking at that when doing research because, we mostly see putting as this, very, very variant aspect of the game that you usually want to play the opposite of. But, honestly, I think it's a decent thing to factor in just a little bit. We kind of see a lot of things, pretty much everything but greens regulation. And I guess strokes gained approach doesn't really have the usual oomph that it does most weeks, but still, it's very important. Always one of the most important stats. I think I've been saying POA earlier. I actually meant rye. I used to have rye grass. I don't know if it was like rye and POA or something. I don't know where I thought that, but we're switching from having really heavy rye grass to this more modern Bermuda, nicer grass. It's a lot more predictable. Should help the better putters a little bit. That's kind of the main concept I gathered from that. So just again, this week we're looking for guys that can just crush the ball. Driving accuracy is a nice little bonus here, but you do want that distance. It just makes a lot of sense here. And on top of that, just an overall pretty good game in all aspects, without any big struggles, especially if that struggling has to do with scrambling. I'd be more likely to play someone that's just having a lot of problems putting than someone that's having problems with scrambling. That's definitely going to be something to keep in mind there. So looking at the people in this field, it's usually a pretty strong field here. We've got Rory, who pretty much he plays every single year. He's won this thing multiple times. Jason Day is coming back to defend his title. You've got Fowler, Rose, Matsuyama, and Sergio. Those are pretty much the big name players in the field. Hometown guy Webb Simpson and Paul Casey Finau, Phil Mickelson. That pretty much makes it for that pretty much does it for the big notable guys, pretty much the 9K and above guys on DraftKings. So we have some bigger names in there, but it's sort of hollow. The quality in golfer drops off pretty significantly. So you almost do want to go up there for the best golfers this week. There's just such a drop off in talent. Or you can focus on the lower 8K range has some value, upper 7K. You can find enough value to get you some guys that aren't too terrible and be able to save up for some of these few studs at the top. So, gonna start off the field here with Rory McIlroy, pretty much the king of this course. He had one miscut back in 2011 after he won in 2010. And then from there on out, it was five straight top 10 finishes. At the new course here, at the PGA Championship, he finished 22nd. And last year he finished in 16th. Wasn't too bad. Pretty just consistent and smooth. He's been playing lights out. Him finishing 21st at the Masters, it looks like a big step back for him after those six top sixes in a row. As I always do when comparing the value of the top guys, he's pushing 12K, but he has the Vegas price of someone that really should be pushing 12K at 5-1 currently. I don't think it's actually 5-1. I think it's 6-1, but plus 500. You know what I mean? Vegas be confusing. I wish everyone just used decimal all the time, but Rory. Hard to go wrong with him. Number one projected fantasy point scoring per round. Damn near a lock to make the cut. Has really had a bad performance since that WGC event out in China way back in, October. Since then, the dude's just been on fire. Unreal. Number one golfer this year for sure. Hits it 315 off the tee. Just a no-nonsense sort of play. People are going to be paying up for him. It just makes a whole lot of sense. Gains 31 fantasy points to the field on average. Gains 4.5 birdies to the field on average. Just Yeah, with his ridiculously high price, it's hard to say if he'll be terribly chalky, but you know a lot of people are still going to be paying for him. No issue there. But yeah, right next to him, Jason Day, $11,000. He's coming in about 10-1. Winner, obviously, last year and ninth at that PGA Championship. Hadn't played after that, well, before that, since the initial redesign. Back in 2012, he finished in ninth. Consistent history here. And you know that he excels at all things short game. It's just how he rolls, literally. Very good at putting on Bermuda. You know, the strokes gained off the tee numbers, they're not going to be very good, but he's actually kind of recently improved his driving accuracy to go along with his 310-yard drive. So Day, almost to the extent of Rory, but not quite, but Day, really, really safe play. A lot more safer than usual. You know, this is the exact kind of course you'd want to play Jason Day at, honestly, because he's never been good at driving accuracy. Not even really that great at stroke scanned approach. That has not been his forte at all. Only real issue I see is recently struggled a little bit around the greens, but I tend not to worry about Jason Day when it comes to all things short game. So, you know, we've seen him also when he's not, you know, withdrawing at the Arnold Palmer. He really, really does like to just spam top tens throughout the year. It's hard to see him not doing that again this year. It's just, you know, the price of him on both sides really is a bit much. You know, we've been seeing Jason Day in like the 9,000s in certain spots, but when you're one of the few studs here, you kind of deserve to get priced up a little bit, especially with him being the defending winner and all. But if you can afford for him, if you can afford him at all, I would pay for him. Again, it's just with these guys up top, it's really hard to get up there. And really go over the field on some of these guys, because everyone's going to want to get a piece of them, especially like Rory. But I couldn't see why Day couldn't get to that point. Maybe people are, you know, scared of him withdrawing or pissed off from the Arnold Palmer or even the Valspar where he missed the cut. But still, it just feels like a place where Jason Day is not going to have any issue at all. Then after that, you've got Ricky Fowler at $10,600. 11-6 on FanDuel. He's coming in 11-1 right now. Winner here back in 2012. And some good finishes here over the last few years. Fourth in 2016, fifth at that PGA Championship, and 21st last year. You know, this is definitely one of his better courses. Kind of does pretty well at all the courses around this general area of the country. He's just a pretty safe overall guy, even though the way he creates his safety is through chaos. It's kind of hard to explain, but the boy puts up fantasy points. That's something he does. He's pretty much second to Rory in those regards. Puts up a lot more fantasy points and gains a lot more birdies than Jason Day does. Jason Day is just a much safer, like, top 20 finisher. Ricky Fowler, I don't really know where I stand on him this week. You know, sort of the same play as Jason Day to me. You know, good form, recent winner at Waste Management, Waste Management, almost won the Honda Classic, top 10 at the Masters. And the dude's in great form. Dude makes a lot of cuts, like a lot of cuts. He's made 90% of his cuts over the last year. And he's just, he's going to get overshadowed a little bit by the next guy I'm going to talk about. It's a bit underpriced, but we're not used to paying up this much for Ricky Fowler, but I absolutely, you know, see the case too this week. It's just kind of all laid out there in front of you. And it does rate out better for the course than Jason Day does, coming in at third overall. Now, Justin Rose, he rates out number one in a projected round score, but fifth in projected fantasy points per round, at least on DraftKings. I think on FanDuel, yeah, he's also right there. Second in projected fantasy point scoring, on FanDuel. A little bit better value on FanDuel, but $10,300 for Justin Rose, who, you know, I could swear that I would never see Justin Rose outside the top three of a non-major for the rest of the year, but, you know, a couple of okay, not even that bad, sort of missed cuts from him at the Masters and the Arnold Palmer. But remember, we are only like four events removed from him winning at the Farmers Insurance Open, which is like the bomber course of the PGA Tour, the longest course in the PGA Tour, actually. So I don't really have any concerns about Rose. He also won last year at Fort Worth, which is pretty darn long for a par 71. I'm not sure about ownership on him. We saw him kind of dip at the Masters, for how owned he really should have been. You know, I know he screwed over a lot of people, but you know, usually we see him with a crazy ownership. It wasn't exactly the case at the Masters. It got a little bit spread out, but this week I don't see any problem with using him. I'll probably target Rose myself over guys like Day and Fowler. Just kind of roll with them there. He's way more expensive on FanDuel, so you know, you could either go with him for the lowered ownership or just avoid him for the dumb price. I don't even know if it's dumb. I think FanDuel just has the right price on him, and DraftKings is just kind of sleeping on Rose a little bit here. So Justin Rose, he's just so super consistent and awesome. He just kind of stopped being consistent and awesome finally after like a year and a half, just recently, but he has a lot of upside for me. Right now his implied odds for a top 20 finish is at 48%, or pretty much right there with Fowler and Day, and just for a much cheaper price. So probably cash game play. He's pretty much always a cash game play for me. And then with how good he is at the long par fours, I really don't mind making him a bit of a core play for, this week. Just getting it done all over the golf course, not just in one particular spot. And you know, the driver is always good with Mr. Justin Rose. And then to finish out the 10,000 plus guys here, we've got Hideki Matsuyama, who's you know, still continuing his solid play. Looked like he was going to screw over everybody at the Masters. Ended up really putting it together with a nice little Friday and squeaking out T32. Could have been a lot worse. You know, we would see everyone stop playing Rose if he really were to, or not Rose, but Matsuyama, if he really were to just get screwed over at the Masters as hard as Rose did. I think people are a lot more forgiving with Rose than Matsuyama. You know, they'll stop playing that guy for like any reason. He had just started to get a little bit ramped up because, I mean, his approach game is just on fire. He's made every cut this season. But yeah, his I think this probably isn't the best week to use him. See his ownership going down, probably for a good reason, just because I don't see, you know, the kind of things he's bringing to the table being as important as usual. You know, it's pretty much his approach game that's just on fire. You know, crappy putter as usual. I mean, in GPP, obviously, that's a ton of upside. You really do want to play that. But $10,100, it's a lot to spend for the guy. A lot of guys in the 9Ks are just straight up better value, in my opinion. So, I don't know. If you like him, he'll be less owned. And if you hate him, just don't play him. Play someone else here. You got Sergio Garcia at $9,900. And this will finish off the free part of this podcast. Usually I just do the 10K guys. But I'll throw in Sergio because why not? He's fun. Missed the cut here most recently in 2017. And also missed the cut at the Masters alongside Mr. Justin Rose there. You know, came back on tour after turning things around in the European Tour after an awful PGA Tour season the previous year. You know, starting off some really good finishes at WGC Mexico, the Honda Classic. You know, Valspar just made the cut, didn't do anything with it, and then that missed cut at the Masters. This kind of looks like a little bit of a straight decline. I'm sure that's what most people see. With him priced up at $9,900, it's just too much, you know? Guy right underneath him, a few of the guys right underneath him, honestly, come in with just straight-up better odds. He's, you know, Sergio is just so underpriced that his ownership was just so high, and you know, I think they just kind of overcompensated for his, you know, his ownership by pricing him up too high. But FanDuel actually has him at a pretty darn cheap price. If you're playing both sides, just play him over there on FanDuel. Won't even have his European results in there anyway. There's a lot more affordable over there when you're, you know, compared to other guys in this price range relatively. And yeah, I mean, statistically, he's still kind of screwed up from just his constant miscuts and stuff from a year ago. But you really just want to kind of look at what he's done recently. I think it was sort of a mental thing that got into him. I don't know. But you know, for me, he's kind of too priced for me to worry about anyway. Just, you know, $9,900, damn near paying $10,000 for a guy with just a lot of uncertainties. And I'd rather go with someone that's a lot more established, especially at the course. So check back with us next week. Good luck in your contest for Wells Fargo Championship, guys, and you VIPs, VIP Army members. I'll see you guys in a little bit here. If you're not a VIP member and want to join, obviously check out dfsarmy.com, and you can look at all the things we offer. Use promo code TACO on sign up. Get you a lifetime 20% off discount. And, yep, for you VIP guys, I'll be right back. For everyone else, see ya. All right, what is up, Army members? How are we doing here? Up next, we've got a guy that I'm glad I didn't have to give to the public, folks, because this is a great play here. Webb Simpson, $9,700. Just crushing over the last 2 weeks. 16th at the RBC Heritage, and 5th at the Masters. That was a really good showing. Nice bounce back from Valspar, where he had pretty unfortunate miscut after a good showing, trying to defend his title at the Players. So this guy has been incredibly consistent and good over the last year, and now he's at his home course, where you know I don't think he's won yet, but he's come awfully close. You know, runner up in 2015. Fourth in 2012, has made the cut pretty well the last 2 years. Really nice cash game play, I'd say. He comes in fifth in projected round score, but like 14th in projected fantasy points per round. So, you know, I think a lot of that comes from him being a real short off the tee. It's, you know, a little bit of an issue here. Only hitting at 285 recently. But other than that, everything else about his game just been spot on. His putter is running a little bit hotter earlier, but he does putt a lot better on Bermuda grass than other grass types. Something to kind of look forward to with him there. Recently, over the last 10 rounds, he's gained strokes in every single category, gaining some pretty decent strokes in approach and around the green. So, like to see him a little well-rounded out there. Been really good with his around-the-green work, too, which will help him out a bit here. Just a really safe play. Paul Casey, also usually pretty darn safe play, but man, he's been all over the place at the Masters. Oh, boy. I mean, how do you get more variant than this guy so far? His finishes since Pebble. You know, he had runner-up there, the 25th at the Genesis, third WGC Mexico, and then horrible, almost last place finish at the Players, and then wins Valspar, and then almost comes last place in the Masters. So I don't know, maybe it's just the, you know, big prize pool tournaments where he's stinking. But yeah, honestly, that Masters miscut and, you know, almost DFL, that was really shocking, because Casey had a very, very good course history here. Well, at the Masters, and he does have a good course history here, 41st, 13th, and 5th last year, but who knows, he's kind of not acting like himself. Usually it's just a very consistent, good scorer, he's making cuts, but really couldn't be any more up and down than he has been over his last four tournaments. should still get a little bit of love. I think more people give it to Finau below him. But, you know, I mean, he just won. So, that upside, it's all over the place. You know, pretty good for what we're looking for here with that 70% driving accuracy with the 300-yard driver off the tee. So I like seeing that from Mr. Paul Casey there. And I won't play him in cash or anything, but he's going to be someone that I will rotate through GPPs. Tony Finau at $9,300. Kind of harped on a little bit here earlier. All made cuts in his history here, but no top 15s yet. Couldn't have looked much better than he did at the Masters. Almost bringing it down to the wire with Tiger Woods. And then here he breaks out fourth in both projected round score and projected fantasy points per round. Kind of always does that. Just very good at fantasy scoring. He's someone that's just always going to be popular because he always just scores well with how the scoring setup is. Moving right along here through the $9,000 range, Phil Mickelson. What an incredible history he has here. At that PGA Championship, he finished 118th. Like, it was not good at all. If you just look at the Wells Fargo Championships, he's like a top 15 lock. In fact, of his last eight tournaments played at the Wells Fargo Championship, he has finished top five in five of those, and he's only had one finish outside of the top 11, and that was a T26 in 2012. So he's playing well here all the time, and it just makes so much sense, you know? He's always bad with driving accuracy. He just lets it rip. But that's kind of what you want to do here a little bit, and he's so, so good at scrambling out. That's, I mean, that's Phil for you, and that's what you're going to need to do here. So, I mean, this makes perfect sense for me why Phil would be good. His ownership has come in, like, stupidly low for weeks in a row, and I think his course history here will indeed change that. But it's important to keep in mind that he had a runner-up finish at the Desert Classic and a winner at Pebble Beach, and those were multi-course events, so either no or very limited shot link data from those events will probably skew him way down in stat models. Like, nobody's been playing Phil Mickelson, so if you want to take advantage of that leverage, then that's a really, really smart GPP move. You know, I usually tend to just fade him and wait to see if he's doing okay, and if he's doing okay, play him in showdown. But this week, I just play Phil Mickelson. Just feel like it's a really good week to do that. Then finishing off the $9,000 range is Gary Woodland. And Woodland, like Mickelson and Finau, above him, just crazy in price on DraftKings, or on FanDuel. Paul Casey, too. These guys are all over $11,000. But yeah, Woodland had pretty solid history here until last year, missing that cut. Slowed down. He still hasn't missed a cut. He has that crazy made cut streak going, but he's slowed down over his last few events. You know, scores a lot more fantasy points than the usual kind of guy in his range. So I will like him because of that, but definitely keeping it GPP only still, even with all the made cuts in a row. That's just my take on him right now. Again, he's a little expensive for what I'm looking for. Next up, you've got Henrik Stenson at $8,900. My guy. Why do I keep wanting to say BMW Championship? It's the PGA Championship. It was the first time, honestly, in recent history that he's done any well this tournament. He has had awful course history here. But he's 13th at the PGA. And I don't know, maybe some of the changes will be a good thing for Stenson here. His game log's starting to look not very good. You know, I don't think people are going to be playing him a whole lot. I always play him, so I don't have to think about it. But if I did have to think about it, I would probably not do it, honestly. I would play him on FanDuel, actually. I think his scoring and style lends himself better to FanDuel scoring, but I don't know. I think I still actually would play him just because he is indeed very good at long par 4 scoring. But, you know, it's kind of hard to remove my bias here. Patrick Reed, $8,800. So far, he's been top 10 at both of the events since the green switchover. He's been kind of struggling lately, honestly. He's been, you know, a very low-owned guy. Doesn't rate out well for me, just because he sucks at everything that has to do with driving. And I'll probably leave him out, honestly, but knowing the guys around him, you almost might want to pick up Reed just for the pivot, because the next play on the board is Jason Kokrak, a.k.a. Chalk. His history is a little sketchy, but his current form right now is just absolutely insane. Probably the best form of anyone in the tournament besides Rory McIlroy and Jason Day and Ricky Fowler. Like, those three studs. Other than that, man, Jason Kokrak's form is just nutty. We have, what, 5 top 16 finishes in the last 6 events for him, going back to the Honda Classic. That's just insane. Kokrak, Chalk, might as well just call him Chalk Rack like we've been doing. Cash gameplay, almost for sure. And a GPP, I would fade him, just because he's going to come in with some really large ownership. I'd bite my fingernails the whole time, but I will still fade the guy, just for GPP. Underneath him, Sungjae Im and Lucas Glover. They're kind of similar plays here. I know Im's missing a few more cuts than him, but they've been really up and down, either performing really well and posting top 20s or like missing the cut. And we saw the ultimate example of that kind of guy do well here last year in Aaron Wise, quite a runner-up here, and we're probably about to talk about it here soon. But for me, these guys kind of have similar value. Im has just now finally started being chalk, and then when he does, you know, like, he has that miscut, like at the RBC Heritage. Glover actually tied with him in that miscut, but Glover literally has nothing but miscuts or top 20 finishes. It's honestly insane. I don't even know if people take him or not. It's like when he goes on a little streak, like he's been doing these top 15s. People really start to get on him. Once he misses a cut, like, everybody abandons ship. So if it's going to keep going like it's been after he missed the cut, the waste management and the players, I'm about it. I'll go ahead and play him there. And then we've got one of my favorite guys here, Charles Howell III. I usually love playing this guy. $8,400. It's not because of the miscut at the RBC Heritage. It's not that. It's not the reason I'm going to be fading him. It's because he's so good in particular at medium length par 4 scoring, and he gets none of those, absolutely none of them, to attack here. So that really sucks for him. But yeah, that and that with the combination of it just getting later in the season and Charles Howell sort of being a springtime warrior, you know, I'll wait and see with him. I'd just rather roll with, like, Glover, Kokrak, Sungjae, you know, any of these sort of guys. Even Byung-Hung An, who couldn't have looked much worse last week, but don't mind rolling it back with him here. He kind of has a little bit of what Howell's got going on, as where he's good at the medium-length par 4 scoring, but he's usually someone that avoids ownership that's too crazy. I know that people historically love Charles Howell III. He's been chalk many times. I really can't remember the last time that Byung-Hung An was terribly chalk. So don't mind him at a course where off the tee stuff matters a whole lot, because that's like his primary skill. And then keep moving down, Johnny Vegas. He's been really solid last five tournaments in a row, all top 30s. And heading into a place where he has not had success in the past, has yet to finish better than T42. But he could still, he's just been in good enough form to where it's sort of like a mini Kokrak kind of play there. Then $8,100 and $8,500 on FanDuel, very, very cheap on FanDuel, is Aaron Wise, last year's runner-up. I would always use the term boom or bust to describe him, because for the most part, he will either come like top 15 and be contending for a tournament, or he'll just miss the cut horribly. It was the former last year, and most recently at the Masters, we saw him do incredibly well, finishing T17. This is a guy who is an NCAA champion. You know, he has a lot of talent, still very young, and I think people have been forgetting about him. He had a lot of hype earlier in this season, and the ownership was quickly to it just kind of quickly left him as kind of as fast as it came. Should get a little bit popular this week with his finish last year and kind of his odds to pricing right now. But I really do like the way that he sets up for the course as a bomber and all that. Another bomber is Luke List, who finished top 10 here last year, but his form right now is kind of shaky. You've got Keegan Bradley, start off the $8,000 guys along with List there. You know, his odds are a little better than List. I think more people use him than List, but not huge on Keegan Bradley myself. He's not even hitting it 300 yards off the tee anymore. He is hitting it with a lot of driving accuracy, but still it remains, you know, this is just same old Keegan Bradley. Extremely good at strokes gained approach. Extremely mediocre at everything else except for putting, where he's extremely bad. He's bad. Just an awful putter. That's Keegan for you. It's kind of the same thing every week, but this is a course that he has yet to have a lot of success at, and I actually think people will own him a little bit this week. You've got Zach Johnson, who finally showed a decent performance at the RBC Heritage, but that's like, you know, a course that is like picture perfect for him. Hitting it 286 off the tee here isn't going to be very ideal, so I think I'll kind of avoid him, for especially at such a high price. I'd much rather go with JB Holmes or Keith Mitchell here in this range. You know, both of these guys are coming off of not only recent wins, but recent skids after those wins, which will get those ownership down. And you know, JB Holmes is a bomber all the way, but Keith Mitchell is too. He's so good at stroke scanned off the tee, and is very good at everything that has to do with fantasy scoring and birdie making and gaining fantasy points. So I actually don't mind Keith Mitchell at all. Even before the win and all that, he was, you know, somebody that just has a lot of upside, but only at certain kinds of courses, honestly. And this is definitely one of those courses, I would say. Made the cut here last year. You got Sung Kang for the same price, who's been, you know, making a bunch of cuts in a row. Him and Nick Taylor kind of in the same sort of bag here. They're starting to play really well. Just making cuts over and over again, but like Vegas still absolutely hates them, and they're likely to regress eventually and just go back to being the crappy golfers there are. I don't know. I would be more into using Sung Kang if he was better at stuff like scoring birdies. You know, he loses a bunch of birdies to the field. He just keeps it steady with pars and stuff to keep himself in these tournaments, but not really too sold on him. Not sold on Kevin Streelman either, even after two sixth place finishes in a row, because before that it was just ridiculously awful. Let's not let that cloud our judgment from all the events before that, where he was just so bad. And going down to this range here, you know, you got a lot of interesting names in the upper 7K. We'll start off with good Rory Sabatini. This is a course where he's had a little bit of success at. 8th in 2014, 3rd in 2011, made the cut 27th last year. He's been on a little bit of a roll. Last year is sort of like this too. He'd just make cut after cut after cut. He's made 80% of his cuts over the last year. But in the early part of this year, he actually went on a little bit of a slide with some missed cuts in a row and stuff. But he's gotten that together. It's pretty much... He kept himself in the top 40 for the last six tournaments in a row, and that culminated to a 10th place finish last week. And with this being a course he's also had some success at, and him just, you know, playing pretty solid all-around golf right now and getting a lot of strokes scanned off the tee and around the green, I think that that will help him here tremendously. I've got Daniel Berger, who I know that he has good long iron skill, and people have really been sleeping on him. So I'll play me some Berger. I am a little bit worried about the odds to pricing. It looks a little good, but I still think people have really kind of given up on Berger. The only good finish so far this year has come at the Puerto Rico Open. So again, you know, maybe people will find themselves on Berger just with his, you know, him just having a little more name value than the guys around him, especially like Castro and Watney and Sabatini. He's, I mean, he was just the rookie of the year just a few years ago. Here's an interesting guy right here for sure. Roberto Castro, top 10 the last two times he's played here. That was before 2017. Runner up in 2016. Ultra short off the tee, 283. So you might want to cross him off already. But, I mean, I won't. I don't know why he's done so well at this course before, but I'm a little bit intrigued. He's just sort of one of my guys here, along with Watney, same price. I love these two, and I roster him a bunch. Watney's starting to annoy me a little bit, but what do these guys have in common other than them regularly finding spots in my roster and them both being $7,600 on DraftKings? Well, they both finished runner-up last time that they teed it up here. With Watney, that was just last year. And he had top 10 finishes in 2013 and 2012 as well. Of course, you know, he didn't play the last couple of years when he was out with injury, but he's been playing for over a full year now, post-injury. I think he is perfectly fine. Don't like his current form that he's in, but yeah, keep the ownership down, I guess. Then I think a lot of this ownership will go to this guy I've heard so much about this week, Joel Dahman, who forgot to golf for 5 weeks in a row. You know, it kind of happens, but you know, shake that off and you know, really just get rid of that little portion of the season. His season has been pretty perfect, all made cuts, some top 20s and everything. So Dahman, I understand the play there. I'll probably swerve just because I know that people are going to take him, and I don't see him being very good at scoring fantasy points. Only 292 off the tee. Moving right along here to Mr. JT Poston, $7,500. Debuted with a miscut here last year, but the sixth place finish last week at the RBC Heritage. Good way to kind of turn it back around to that form he had been building up since the Sony. Good at fantasy points scoring, good at just, you know, just overall production. Been kind of putting lately, you know, not doing too much with the driver. I'd like to see a little bit more work be done with the driver in either accuracy or distance. He's kind of got neither, but still good cut making prowess from the guy. I got Trey Molinex, who's stupid long off the tee, but his numbers have really fallen down. He was looking like he would be the next like 320 plus like driver, but right now this season it's like 304. And we usually do see this with a lot of the younger guys. You know, you can ask Daniel Berger, like his distance once went way down after he had stopped just, you know, being just a raw bomber and started putting more control on this game. That's probably what's happening with Mr. Molinex here. He's still pretty long. The form, meh. Could be a lot better, but I'm about to try and convince y'all to use some guys with even worse form here. I'm going to skip Jimmy Walken. He ticks me off. But Michael Thompson, $7,400. He's, you know, he had a crazy random streak of like five top 20 finishes in a row. And then he had a streak of three straight like MDFs or just spots where he'd make the cut and then just come last, like 70th, 70th, and 72nd. But finally turned around with a 10th place finish last year. I know that he doesn't have the pedigree to kind of back up this level of play, but I mean, there's a little bit of a chance that he might just be a seriously discounted version of Lucas Glover this week. And yeah, man, just going down a little bit further here, going to run through this field. I am so tired. Wyndham Clark, I'd mentioned him earlier. Very good price on FanDuel. DraftKings still paying for him. DraftKings still has it incorrect in their game log where they listed him as like last place at the players, but he just got disqualified early. And he was doing pretty well at that. So really, he's on a much longer streak than it seems. Kind of all over this play. He ranks 6th in projected fantasy point scoring per round and 10th in projected score per round, 312 yards off the tee. This is honestly my favorite play in the entire slate right here. Wyndham Clark, that's the man right there. And on FanDuel also, awesome play. Moving down a little further, some guys I'll point out. Nick Taylor, just like I mentioned with Sung Kang, he's on a really long streak of made cuts, but here at this event, he has 3 missed cuts, and that's it. So I'll fade him for those reasons. I'll play Danny Lee, because Wildcat made me. And Kung Hoon Lee, $7,300, or KH Lee, however you want to say it. Had that withdraw at the Valspar Championship, which was kind of weird, but other than that, his last 4 events, really his last 6 events, been very, very good. Statistically, he has some spots where he really does shine, especially looking at the fantasy scoring projections here. Short par 4s, I know there are only a couple of them, but he's 8th in that. But he's almost dead last in the field in medium length par 4s, where we have none of, and then 6th in the field in long par 4s, which we have 9 of. So, I mean, this course is just picture perfect for him. He also crushes the par 5s. Only issue is the par 3s. He kind of sucks at those. But, yeah, that's my play there for sure. Moving down, Matt Jones, low-key been playing some pretty decent golf. And then you got a little value pocket right here. Well, before I mention that, I guess it's reasonable to mention Cameron Champ. I know he's had so many bad performances in a row, but I mean, he won earlier this season at the top 10s and stuff, man. And he hits it so long. 320 or 321 on the season on average. That is insane. Recently it's been like 312, but still. Dude's a beast. And then right down here at $7,200, 2 plays that do stick out big time. Sam Burns, who has 4 straight top 30 finishes, 9th last week. And then known entity, Adam Hadwin, being priced like the Adam Hadwin of old, $2,600 cheaper. No, I'm sorry, $1,600 cheaper on DraftKings and FanDuel. Kind of got really priced up over there, but Burns, super cheap on both sites. I don't mind get exposure to these guys. I know that Hadwin had some pretty bad form until last year, and he finished 16th. Before that was no bueno. But yeah, I really like these two here. I just think other people will too. I mean, the odds to pricing difference, it's a little bit apparent. And now if we go to 7K even, I like what I see there with Chesson Hadley, top 20 in this event the last 3 times he's teed it up, including 16th last year. And you've also got Denny McCartney, who's just been playing some solid golf. I know he's short off the tee, and that will hurt, but he doesn't double bogey, and he generally can work himself into the cuts. He's been kind of doing everything well recently, except approach. He could work on approach. And now down to one of my other favorite plays of the week, and that is Johnson Wagner. Now, he's always one of my favorite plays. Anyone's been listening to these podcasts knows that I almost always recommend Johnson Wagner. The dude's super cheap, never breaks like 3% ownership, let alone like 2% ownership. And hear me out here. Wagner finished 13th last year. He's also a member of this course and plays like multiple times a week when he's at home. So, yeah, I'm all about this Johnson Wagner play, to be honest. It wasn't too long ago we saw him finish runner-up in Puerto Rico. We know he's capable of something. Usually it's just making the cut and finishing like T58, but still, he's got some stuff he can accomplish here. I think he really cares about this tournament. And then, this range here, like 6,700 and under, you got Wagner, you got Bird, who kind of bounced back from the miscut and made it seem like he's really good again. And of course, he has some top 15s at, just not recently. But yeah, it's easy to skip over a lot of these dudes here. Like here's where you have your sort of loser one-off winners like Ted Potter, Martin Trainer, Adam Long, these kind of guys. You got Julian Attulian, who's like Mr. Made Cup. He's coming off a withdrawal in Texas at 6,600, so he's kind of shaky. Von Taylor, seems like a cash game play, honestly, right there at $6,600, just with how he usually is. But it's just so hard to actually pinpoint down some plays and and I use them for real. If I mentioned Adam Shank, actually, at $6,700. He's someone to look out for. I know he was popular last week and missed the cut at the RBC Heritage, but now it's the reason you're playing him. Although, I have seen him name dropped a lot. So actually, I might end up not using him. Plus, he finished like dead last year. And that's never something you want to see too much. And Peter Malnati, also, same price, $6,700. A little bit of a value pocket here, I guess, with a few good guys. He's just been really playing well over the last 5 weeks or so. Really in through the swing season, even a little bit. Just been putting up some high upside performances. Just not a lot of fantasy scoring to go with that. But with these 6K guys, you're never really going to find that great of fantasy scoring. Or if you do, they're going to be like the Hank Lobaitas of the world and just get a few eagles and then miss the cut. Yeah, after that, man, just looking through this garbage bin, it's so hard. I might take a little look at Mr. Tom Lovelady at minimum price. He hits at 312 off the tee, 315 over the last year. I know his performance has been kind of crap, but he was almost a first round leader here last year. So be that as it may. That's gonna do it for this field here, guys. Best of luck to all of you. I really want to see some of you guys take down something really nice and awesome here. And I will see you guys next week, next Tuesday, for the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast. I'll see you guys later.